It's New Hampshire Headlines in WKXL. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead, nhtalkradio.com. You get the back episodes of the show and all these episodes on demand. Also, be sure to search for WKXL on YouTube and Facebook, where we post these interviews as videos. Happy to be joined this week again by editor Jeff Feingold of the New Hampshire Business Review. Welcome back.
Great to be here, AJ.
So we're going to actually get away from real estate for a little bit, maybe for part of this episode at least. We'll start off with something different and talk skilled trades. And there's a report probing the shortage of those in the Northeast. And it's something that people don't think about until, oh, no, we need to really do something very specific that you need like decades of experience to do correctly before you realize, oh, no, the industry's really hurting.
Yes, this report was specifically about people who specialize in preservation trades, you know, people who work on restoring old buildings or other landmarks, historical resources, stone walls, things of that nature. And there, that is a profession that is just dominated by a lot of older people. And I should probably say mostly older men. And this is a report that was conducted not just about New Hampshire, but about the whole Northeast, because of several organizations that are involved in preservation, including the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance, and one in Maine, one in Vermont, and one in New York State. They teamed up to start an initiative on trying to, you know, spread the word about the preservation trades, you know, like masonry, you know, specialized carpentry, gets kind of in the weeds stuff, decorative finishes, you know, because you know, when you go to some of these older historical homes, there's a lot of just beautiful finishes and other things that you really need to preserve, and it takes a certain skill to preserve them. And they were basically sounding the alarm. The interesting thing is that the Preservation Alliance, every year they put out a thing about seven to save historical resources, and usually just they name, you know, some kind of, you know, usually maybe an old town hall or an opera house or, you know, things of those in that nature. But last year, one of the seven to save was the preservation trades. And I think that probably led to them being involved in this, in putting together this report.
It's not terribly surprising. I mean, you look at the career, the paths that many people that are going through the K-12 education system nowadays are going, they're more likely to end up going to a college, whether it's undergrad or straight through and get a master's after that.
Yes.
If we are in dire need of things like electricians and plumbers, just general trades like that, to have a niche career like that, it's got to be very hard to A, make sure you got a pipeline for it, and B, have enough business to really have it be something you can do as your full-time employment.
I mean, I think that the root of the problem is that there's a shortage of people in the construction trades.
Yeah.
Basically, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, you get to go down a whole list. And I think those people are the ones who maybe get involved in, you know, in honing their skills and specializing. But because there's such a limited number of people, kids, I should say, everyone's a kid to me, I'm so old, but, you know, young people not being encouraged or not being directed or even informed about the quality of these jobs, you know, the pay is usually really, really good in these trades. And in the preservation trades, it's probably even a higher level because that's so specialized. But, you know, this is the kind of thing it's a conversation that's going on for years. I know there have been real efforts to really raise this among young people, because for, I'd say, probably a couple generations now, we've kind of like put that aside. So you have to go to college. You have to go to college. You got to go 4 years of college. Well, you know, not everybody does.
Yeah.
And I think that's a message that I think has to be unwound a little bit, because it's just not fair. It's not fair to the students, because a lot of people end up in a college situation who really probably shouldn't be there. And, you know, it's because, you know, they're just being told they should be there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they they'll thrive in college.
Yeah. We've talked about it multiple times. I mean, the overhead of when you leave college completely limits what your career paths are going to be, because you got to have something that can afford to pay off those student loans that you
have. Exactly. And the irony is that in many of the trades, you get an apprentice, a paid apprenticeship. They're desperate for people to learn those trades. And you can get a paid apprenticeship. I know that the Carpenters Union's done stuff. They have a massive program, and other places have done other apprentice programs. And this is the kind of thing. It's not. I really think it's a message that has to go out to like the guidance counselors and others who are the ones who are talking to kids. And actually, there was one interesting little thing about how there's been a decline in what they call shop classes. That's what they used to call them when I was a kid. And they used that term. So, well, I understand that. But they're just not the same anymore. They don't have those.
Needs a rebrand.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah. Well, actually, when I was a kid, shop classes, a lot of kids were in shop classes. So I don't know if it needs a rebrand. We've got to get a brand it back to what it used to be because it attracted a lot of kids. But they're just getting a different message nowadays.
And something that's interesting that you had in the article that's referencing something in the report is also what's kind of unique about many of these specialized trades in preservation like this is you don't need to be a big burly guy in order to do it. Like there's many opportunities for women or people to, like maybe if AJ's build, for example, that maybe may, these may be viable career paths.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are some of these skills border on artistry, really. If you look at if you go to a preserved building or something, and you realize how difficult it is, what skills it takes. And that's a challenge that I think a lot of people would like to have, but I don't know if they understand that that's something they can use their skills for if they can hone their skills.
Something sport, and hopefully more people will look to take it up. And I'm going to link the article from NHBR.com at NHTalkRadio.com if you want to check it out. And I'll also link directly to the research report, "Understanding Advancing the Preservation Trades 2023" from UNH's Extension site. It's something to consider. Maybe you know someone that maybe is interested in going down that path. Keeping on, actually, with UNH, they've been talking forever about expanding the West Edge part of campus to be basically a little hive of small businesses and expanding businesses and research and things like that for to be an innovation ecosystem, is what they put it, over in
Yes.
Durham. Can you speak to what's the latest on that?
Yeah, what they're trying to do is they've been planning to do this. I was sidetracked by the pandemic, like so many other things. But they basically want to build like almost like a village that would be filled with housing, offices, research labs, tech companies opening up branches, and it would be a well, that's, I guess tech ecosystem is one way of putting it, but it would be a development. That would be, I don't know if you've ever been to Tuscan Village, but it's probably, I picture it as being like a Tuscan Village, but it's only involving tech and tech related things, innovation related things. But they've been they're just it's getting back on track now, and it's going to be called the Edge at West End in Durham, and it's modeled after a couple of other places that have this kind of thing. They have like tech centers. There's one at UMass Lowell. Some people may have been down there to see that, and there's one at University of Connecticut. And really, what it is, it kind of centers what I know UNH likes to call innovation, because they have the UNH Innovation Office, and it's really it's working. It's a place that they are hoping would attract companies, students, researchers to just have a place where all this stuff can be is being worked on. And because and UNH's research would be obviously very much available, and there'd be like an interaction between the companies and the university, and vice versa, which is what's going on in Lowell and in Connecticut and all over the, in one way you could say that Route 128 or like now Boston in general is like that. It's on a mass scale, or Silicon Valley, but this is more of a localized thing. But it's a I think it's almost like saying UNH put on a shingle. Look, we are really doing some great research. We have some students and researchers who are just doing great jobs. You should set up shop here, and we'll help you grow.
This is something you see a lot with especially medical schools in the Boston area, where like Pfizer or these other different pharmaceutical companies will kind of set up shop right, like either on campus or across the street from campus, hoping to get a funnel of students that maybe want to enter that route. And UNH is hoping to do it for all sorts of other things, especially around the
Yes.
STEM end of things. And they as is, they do have a track record of fairly successful partnerships with the more
Yes.
plugged in interface with their interoperability laboratory.
Absolutely. And they also have an advanced manufacturing center named after one longtime executive of Whelan Engineering over in Charlestown, John Olson. And that's really doing a lot of work. And they've gotten quite a name for themselves over the years since it opened in the last decade or so. And this is something that, that they're focusing on. And I think that one of the things that, just reading between the lines here, I think UNH, this university system as a whole, but UNH in particular in Durham is, and in Manchester, I also have to include that campus. There's a lot of stuff going on there that's been, cutting edge and really interesting and fruitful work. I mean, obviously I'm in the mill yard in Manchester, and I see it every day. You got UNH Manchester, just a few mill buildings down from where Dean Kamen is, and United Therapeutics, and all these other big tech companies doing really cutting edge stuff in terms of that advanced regenerative medicine. And this is the kind of stuff UNH is involved in. And I think it's a way of, in a way, they need to explain this to certain public policymakers in New Hampshire, how important New Hampshire, University of New Hampshire, is to the economy of the state.
Yeah.
It really is important to the state. And, I know we're going through the budget again this year, and who knows what's going to happen with that. But this is something that they really need to understand, that
Yeah.
there's a big payoff for a pretty small investment in the university system.
Yeah, and in I saw this 12 years at the law school here in Concord.
Yes.
It's very, very similar. It's a big thing from the student perspective. Those of you who are considering sending students at what your kids to whatever school or investing in programs such as this. I mean, you have hands-on programming for students where they can actually get into the field and learn how to do things that is hopefully related to what they're studying. They're tremendously more likely to end up in that field. That's exactly how I ended up where I am with all my interests and jobs that I do have done since graduation. It's like if you have the chance to get people in the field, make networking connections, get some hands-on experience so they have a leg up on someone that doesn't have any experience entering the
Yeah.
workforce, it's huge.
And it was interesting you mentioned UNH Law, because that is one of the premier intellectual property programs in the world, as far as I know, certainly in the
Yep, it
country.
is.
And that's another asset that UNH has, especially for a tech company. And that's, these are things that they need to get that they're trying to just kind of, I hate to use this phrase, but cash in on,
Yeah.
maybe not for the money, but just in terms of getting the word out about it.
Yeah, and that was the bill that was sold to the law school when they integrated, when they scooped them up and everything and made that happen. Unfortunately, it kind of was in the tumult after the 2008 financial crisis. Higher education institutes, secondary, post-secondary education institutions like graduate programs, law schools, and everything. It takes several years for the effects of those to happen because when it happens, a bunch of people go off, are able to get law degrees pretty cheap, so they'll go off and get a law degree, leave the workforce, hope that the job market recovers afterwards. It didn't recover for a while in the legal industry, and it seems like now it's starting to recover a lot. Like UNH specifically is basically double, more than doubled their enrollment between the hybrid program and their just residential JD is
Yep,
at least
sure.
doubled.
They do have a big reputation, and I know there's a lot of international students that go there,
Yeah.
who are already lawyers, who are here to study further studies in IP law and other things.
So I want to leave enough time to discuss about this a little bit. Work is beginning for a new residence halls at Revere University. I totally forgot they existed. I didn't know what part of the country they were in. I'd heard the name, but that's it.
That's like a Concord snob. That's a Concord snob to me, or UNH snob.
Exactly.
I don't
Filthy,
know.
filthy university, former university employee, just crapping on other colleges. But what's going on over
Yeah,
there?
so Revere University in Nashua. So, in case you're listening, familiar with it, they have very strong like nursing programs and other science programs, and They apparently have been, just chugging along. When a lot of universities their size, they're a small university, have been having major problems. They're building and growing, and apparently they're growing so much that they've had to build new residence, apartments, I guess, is what they really are. I guess you'd call them a residence hall because it's not in a college, but it's for going to be for mostly for, I believe, graduate students and older students, and apparently their enrollment has really grown significantly over the last few years. Sister Paula Bewley, who's the president, she's been really she's been there for many years, and she's been really successful at raising the profile of the university, of improving, just beefing up the programs they offer, because I know that they have a very well respected nursing program. And they have also really strong business programs, down in Nashua. That's a big plus. And it's really it's it's like I don't want to sound like you, but it wasn't that I forgot about Riviera, but I never thought I didn't realize because you read about some other colleges. I'm not going to talk about them right now. I don't want to mention their names, but they're going through some rough times in New Hampshire. The smaller universities and colleges, but Riviera apparently seems to be doing pretty well, and great for it's great for them. One of the interesting things was apparently Sister Paula mentioned one of the driving forces behind their enrollment rise, and it's because they added men's and women's ice hockey to their sports, and apparently it's been a big increase in enrollment because of that. Which, I guess proves that we are a northern state, where hockey's a big deal. But, there aren't that many ice hockey programs around, and
No,
this
there
is
aren't. I don't think
great.
Franklin Pierce has ones.
Yeah, no, I know that I went to a college in Central New York that had a division, it was a Division III school, and had hockey was huge.
Yeah.
Just it was actually where I went, it was the oldest indoor hockey rink in the Northeast. Because it was pretty, it was pretty old and cold. There was no heating or anything. So,
It's easy to crap on athletics programs as like, oh, why are you wasting it? There's no academic value to it. But when you're talking about recruitment, it adds a huge amount of student life on campus where people interact. You're pulling in more students that maybe you had didn't have a pipeline to before because, hey, they want to play. They know they're not going to be able to be in the NHL necessarily. They're going to a smaller school like this, but they want the ability to continue to play into their 20s when they probably aren't going to be able to if they just enter the workforce or go to a larger college that maybe did won't have room on their teams.
Yeah, well, actually, from another point of view, I know someone who's a kid, my kid's age, so this is a long time ago, who went to University of North Carolina, which is an excellent school because he was a big basketball fan.
Priorities, priorities.
I don't know if that's exactly the logic you're supposed to use when you pick a college, but.
That's too funny. But it's funny. I mean, but it's great seeing more people, especially if it's going to be a pipeline in the long term for the healthcare sector, where we're in
Yes.
desperate need of more nurses and other healthcare
Absolutely.
professionals.
Absolutely. It's a very important it's very important for the state. And also, obviously being in Nashville, I'm sure they feed into Massachusetts as well. They're just as desperate in Massachusetts for skilled healthcare workforce.
Yeah, and looking at just from Google search here, their 2020 stats, they had 1,274 undergraduate students. So if they manage to extend from that, I mean, that's a fair bit of students, and that's great to see.
Yeah, it's really good. It's also good in Nashua because that there's activity there. Because Nashua's got the community college, it's got Riviera. They lost Daniel Webster years ago, and it's good for Nashua because Nashua is is in a very important part of the New Hampshire economy in terms of the tech companies there, BAE Systems alone, but many others.
All right, we're about out of time for this week's episode of New Hampshire Headlines. Thank you so much, Jeff Feingold of the New Hampshire Business Review.
It's great talking to you, AJ.
NHBR.com to get all the articles. Now, I'll also post direct links to all the articles we discuss at NHTalkRadio.com. And it's also alongside the video. If you go to YouTube, you can watch the interview there also. Please be sure to like and subscribe. This is New Hampshire Headlines at WKXL. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead.